Fáilte chuig Fiosrucht agus Foghlaim, a podcast from Hibernia College exploring the ideas, stories and experiences shaping education today. I'm your host, Fiona McArdle. Imagine arriving in a country with one suitcase. New language. New school. New friends. New food. New routines. And now imagine being 8 years old. Now imagine someone simply smiling at you and saying you're welcome here. Every child deserves to walk through the school gates feeling safe, valued, and that they belong. But belonging doesn't happen by accident. It grows through relationships, language, culture, and the everyday decisions teachers make. Today, we're exploring how schools can become places where every child and every family feels welcome. Before we dive in, I'd like you maybe to think back to your very first day in a new school, or a new job, or even moving to a new country. That feeling of wondering where to sit, who to talk to, and whether you'll fit in. I experienced that myself when I moved to Abu Dhabi. Suddenly I was the newcomer. I didn't know the language, I didn't understand every custom, and I was really relying on the kindness of people I'd only just met. It reminded me that belonging doesn't begin with policies or programs. It begins with people. A smile, an invitation, someone remembering your name, and someone saying, "Come and sit with us." And that's why today's conversation matters so much. So I'm delighted to welcome Sarah Hakeem to our podcast. So Sarah, you're very, very welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Fiona. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sarah, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you into equality, diversity and inclusion work?
Okay, so you may have already guessed by my accent, I am a migrant. I'm a migrant to this country. And I come from a long line of migrants as well. So I was born in London. My grandmother was from Tulsk, County Roscommon. Moved to the UK, married my grandfather. They had three daughters. She was very much a Catholic, practicing Catholic, went to Mass every day. And her three daughters married a Jew, a Muslim and an atheist between them.
Wow.
So it was quite a lot for my grandmother. And so that's kind of part of my family backdrop. My father was the Muslim amongst them. He came from Syria. He travelled and he left Syria at the age of 18. And kind of strangely followed the path of many Syrians that many Syrians would take 50 plus years later. He went first to Algeria by boat, and then he took the boat to Paris, to Marseille, and on to Paris, where he stayed for 10 years. And then he went to London and met my mother. So I come from a very varied background. My DNA spit test has definitely proved that from all over the place. It was a complete and utter riot of colours from everywhere. But why in particular am I kind of, and have I come into this work? I suppose you could say that, you know, I went to school in London, which was very, very diverse. But my school was very white, middle class and affluent. And it was the kind of school where rising up really mattered. And my surname, Hakeem, held me back and made me stand out at that point. And when I say held me back, it marked me out as different. I wasn't the only one in the school. There were others as well. But from a very young age, I remember feeling different, feeling othered, not quite fitting in. Even though I understood the social cues, and no matter how hard I fought, and believe you me, I fought like every child fits to blend and fit in. I didn't quite fit in. And this feeling stayed with me for a very, very long time. The other things that kind of sparked, I suppose, attention in me into leading me into this work is that, as I mentioned, my dad was from Syria. He was very political. I grew up to a backdrop of the news across the Middle East. Palestine was very close to his heart. And, you know, I always said that 24-hour rolling news was invented for my dad because it was always on in the background. So the Iran-Iraq wars, the Iraq war, the wars in Lebanon and so on were always there. It was always there as a backdrop. So I suppose that sense of justice kind of began to creep in that time. And, of course, then the Troubles were there as well. And I saw that from all sides and perspectives growing up in London, from the British-English perspective, from the Irish perspective, and so on. But there were a couple of other things that really, really clicked with me as I grew up. I remember going to the cinema to see a film called Cry Freedom. I had no idea what it was about. And it turned out that it was about Steve Biko, who was an activist in South Africa. And it followed and really gave me insight into what was going on in the apartheid in South Africa. Until then, really, it was just a word to me, the apartheid and separation of black and white people. But it shocked me to my core, absolutely shocked me to my core. And as the credits ran, it listed off all the people that had died in prisons during the apartheid era. And the list went on and on and on. And the justifications for their deaths, not so much the justification, but the supposed cause of death, which was fell down the stairs, took ill, things like that. And I just left the cinema feeling very angry. When I was 16, I left my middle-class, white, middle-class, affluent school, and I went to a very, very different school. Was very diverse. It was Catholic school, as had the previous ones been, but it was really, really, really diverse. And there were kids there from many countries, from Ireland, but also from Portugal, Spain, the Philippines, from parts of southern India, Goa, Kerala, places like that, and a lot of kids from Afro-Caribbean backgrounds, and some from African, but particularly Nigerian backgrounds. And that opened my eyes to a different form of inequality. There was a social, from a class inequality that it really opened my eyes to, but also to a, very much to a racial inequality that existed in London. And I knew it was there, but I really, really saw it and felt it for the first time. Anyway, roll on a load of years. I went on to university. I studied social anthropology, which led me onto a social justice path. And a few years later, I'd moved here to Dublin. And after a quick stint in Guinness, which was great fun, I decided that I wanted to move into more social justice work. And I was absolutely thrilled when I got my first role in this area as the youth officer in Amnesty International, Irish section. And it was absolutely brilliant. And I worked with young people in schools and in universities across Ireland, engaging them in social justice issues. And from there, I worked in several other organisations. I suppose it was actually really working there in Amnesty that I realised that for me, the particular thing that I was really interested in was anti-racism and inclusion. And I could see, you know, Ireland was changing. I'd arrived in Ireland in 1999. I'd been coming to Ireland for about 10 years at that point. And I'd seen Ireland change from a relatively homogenous country to being quite mixed and to where we are now. And for me, the need for that inclusion work, that anti-racism work, is more palpable forever. So I'm very fortunate to now be working with Schools of Sanctuary Ireland. It's a wonderful project that aims to ensure that children feel safe, welcome and included in their school, and to make sure that that culture of safety, welcome and inclusion is absolutely embedded right across the school, that it's not just a little project, not something we do on Friday afternoon for 2 hours or Monday during something. It is embedded right across the school culture, from from the staff, from the student, from the board of management, to the parents linked into that school, and to all the other access points that that school links in with.
Sarah, thanks so much for sharing all that, and thanks especially for your vulnerability, you know, in sharing your experience growing up as well. I knew when I met you for the first time, I think we met in the King's Inns. Yeah, mm-hmm. We were at the Immigrant mm-hmm. Council of Ireland. Yeah. And I went, this lady has stories to tell and I want to listen to her. So you mentioned something there and I wanted to just touch on it. Mm. This word belonging is everywhere. But what does it actually look like to you?
That's a really good question, Fiona. Thank you. My sense of belonging means knowing that you are accepted, knowing that you are seen, knowing that you are heard, being part of something beyond yourself, greater than yourself, but being allowed to be yourself in that space. I suppose it doesn't mean feeling that you have to hide aspects of yourself, aspects of your character, your culture, your way of thinking, and from a child's perspective, your way of doing things. Mm. It means being able to do things how you always do them within the confines and of a school, yeah. Busy school, you know, and of course every school has its school rules and so on, as does the rest of society in order to function, but being able to be yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful answer. Thanks so much for that. And Sarah, when you walk in, I'd love to focus a little bit on schools of sanctuary. Mm. When you walk into a school where belonging is thriving, what do you notice first, or what do you observe?
It's very difficult to really pinpoint. Mm. I think it's multiple things. I think it varies from school to school. I suppose the most obvious and quick way of seeing that, speedy way, if you like, is that you see it from the moment that you step into a school. Even before you step into the school, maybe you see it from walking up the school drive or outside the school doors, or perhaps you see it from when investigating the school website as a parent, a prospective parent to that school. That message of welcome that is there. So in practical terms, if you want to know about practical terms, it could be that the language that the school website has a Google Translate function on. Now, I know that we all know now how to do that and that's possible, but not every parent is equipped with that. So, you know, the flags to be able to change the language of the school website are really helpful.
Yes,
yeah. Maybe it doesn't quite 100% make sense to them in their language because the translation doesn't always tally, but it's something there. It says, you know what, oh, they thought of me. Mm. And that's the parent. And, you know, I think the parents feeling comfortable with a school, letting their children, particularly at primary school, go into a school, into the unknown, is vitally important because you have their trust from the get-go, you know. Mm. And from a kid's perspective, from a child's perspective, I always say when I'm going into schools, what can we do to make sure that those kids feel welcome? I kind of think of it like, you know, it's Tuesday afternoon, mid-February, it's miserable outside. The child has been asked to come along to the school, and they're coming into the school in the afternoon because perhaps the teacher has something else to do in the morning or whatever. But from the moment they step foot into that school, they see something that they recognise, especially if English isn't their first language. So that might be welcome signs in lots of different languages, right? And very difficult to cover all of them, but really, you know, you could do your best. Or flags. Also remembering that not every child's flag necessarily represents them, right? Mm. They may have difficulty with the flag of their school. That's probably more pertinent, possibly more pertinent with children who are slightly older. But just seeing an inviting space. It doesn't, you know, somewhere that's warm and welcoming. I think many of us remember the cold, slightly Spartan hallways of the past, and that is changing a lot in schools in so many different capacities. But seeing that welcome, that message is there, I think that's really important. And then, of course, a warm hello and a warm smile. And very often the first person that child or parent may meet is the school secretary. So making sure that the school secretary is warm and welcoming and inclusive and says hello with a big smile on their face and so on. And as you journey through the school on the way to the classroom, that they see themselves, they see that they are reflected. They see themselves reflected around the school. And that doesn't have to be everything everywhere. That can just be a few places, you know, in the corridors, outside of school, in the yard potentially, or just a few things in the classroom.
Thank you so much for that, Sarah. And it's reminding me of one of our other episodes where we were talking about children's literacy, and you touched on it there, that they can see themselves. And I love that saying, you can't be what you can't see. So how class teachers really have to look at their choice of materials and their bookshelf and their little library and their resources. Is there anything else that you think teachers can use or bring in to create classrooms where every child feels seen?
Well, first, I'd like to say that I think lots of teachers are already doing this work fantastically. They're doing an immense job in quite often very difficult circumstances, just given the huge workload that teachers have these days. So I just want to start by saying that. But yes, there are lots of resources out there. And there are teaching resources. But there are also kind of other aspects. There's teaching resources that they can bring in. So yes, you just mentioned it, books and videos, and there's some wonderful little clips that you can find on YouTube for those in-between times, those moments between one session and another. Music, you know, maybe playing some songs from other countries in the world, having conversations about the things that you love from home, whilst remembering that home means different things to different people. And that not every child lives in a home. There may be some children who are living in, for example, in IPAS centres, or and children from Irish families who are living in hotel accommodation, etc., etc. There's so many different resources out there. I think probably what's important is that is for us to maybe signpost teachers to some of those resources. So, for example, developmenteducation.ie, they have a wealth of information. Some of the big NGOs that would come to the tips of the tongue for many people concerned, TROCRA, Oxfam, Amnesty International, have loads of really good resources. But I think, and we have lots of wonderful resources as well, I might add that, and Schools of Sanctuary, and very welcome to look at our website.
SOSI.ie.
SOSI.ie. It sounds funny, but it's simple. Anyway, when schools sign up as members, then you have access to our Padlet, and that has even more. We just can't put everything on the website because trying to
Teachers love these recommendations. So thanks for sharing all them. And also, like, all the teachers that are starting on school placement, they're going out. It's a new arena for them. So just to find places where they can go to source the materials that they need, like, it's so helpful as well.
But also thinking, I think one of the really important things is thinking about how can you make this kind of work and really stream it in with what they're already doing. So it's not necessarily about thinking, oh, I have to do an extra class or whatever. It's thinking about how can you make those linkages in there. So I was talking yesterday with a bunch of teachers, in primary school teachers, who were doing CPD, actually in a lovely forest school setting, which was glorious. And they were talking about various apps that you can use to spin the globe, and it picks a different country, and then kids spend a couple of minutes every day thinking, learning something about a different country across the globe. And it meant that those children were very well versed in the names of different countries, and actually one of the teachers said, when Cape, so you know it's World Cup time at the moment, and Cape Verde were doing brilliantly, and most people had never heard of it before, but a couple of the kids, this country had come up, and so it was wonderful. The kids were like, yeah, we know this. So there's lots of different ways of streaming it in, and a lot of the organisations will help teachers of how you can weave that in. And so it could be, you know, when you're teaching music at primary, that you weave in some songs from international from international singer-songwriters. In secondary, you know, we going on music here again, partly because I love music. You know, I strongly encourage students to set up a Spotify playlist of international music, but not based on what their parents might have listened to, based on what is current and contemporary, and perhaps what family back home are listening to.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, you know, and some of it's kind of the same stuff, but some of it's not, and it's brilliant, and the kids who are mad into music in the school get into it. I suppose what I would say to you is, what are your passions as a teacher? What's your passions outside of the school? What are the things that when you start teaching that you'll find that you end up talking about because it's what you know and what you love? And if that's sport or art or whatever, find ways of weaving that in. You know, I always say to sports teachers and people who love sport, you know, when I first came over to this country, despite having an Irish grandmother and Irish friends, I had no idea about this wonderful, crazy game called hurling. And I don't like field sports, but I love that. And introducing, you know, delving into different countries and into their sports and finding those commonalities, because ultimately it's not what separates us, it's what brings us together.
So true. That's really well put. Thank you for that, Sarah. Now, I want to talk a little bit about SOSI, Schools of Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Many teachers will have heard the term, but they may not know much about it. So what is a School of Sanctuary?
Okay. So as I've already touched on it, a School of Sanctuary is a school that is welcome, inclusive, and feels safe for every student. And it is for every student, right? So whether that is a child from the travelling community, a child who maybe has LGBTQ plus parents or is LGBTQ plus themselves, or perhaps they're neurodiverse or they have a disability, or perhaps, for example, they are the carer of their parent at home, making sure that every child in that school feels included. For us in Schools of Sanctuary Island, we came and we were set up with the principle of including refugees and asylum seekers when they arrived into a new country, a host country. So for us, the particular emphasis is on those children from refugee and international protection applicant backgrounds. So an international protection applicant is the official term of someone who is seeking asylum. That's the process, international protection applicant. So the way that a School of Sanctuary works is that it's really simple, actually. We have a very simple framework of learn, action and share. And it is something that, as I said, we hope that is embedded across the culture of the school. So it's not something that purely happens in lesson time. We expect every school, the board of management, teachers, parents, pupils and so on, to be immersed into this culture. But going back to the framework, and I'm sorry, before I digress, it's about learning about why people are forced to flee, why people have to move countries. Learning the terminology around that. There's very often a lot of confusion around that. And terms such as illegal migrant or asylum seeker or illegals or foreigner or expat or immigrant are used interchangeably without people really realising the difference. So it's about learning those differences. And again, that goes for a lot of staff as well. Right. So learning about why people are forced to flee, learning about the terms, learning something about perhaps the journeys that some people have to undertake in order to get to their host country. And that might be here in Ireland, but it could very well be that their end journey point is in a refugee camp in Jordan. And then learning about what life is like when they arrive in their host country. And I suppose, you know, we're in Ireland, so it's learning about what the process is like here. And maybe people have heard of the term IPAS centre or direct provision, and learning about what that is. And an IPAS was called Direct Provision, but now an IPAS centre, is where some asylum seekers end up. There are also, for example, Ukrainians here who are under a different programme as well. So depending on the age of the students, it's learning about that. It's also learning something about the countries that people are coming from, learning about the beauty, the wonderful things about it, perhaps some of the things that students miss from their home, that they, their country of origin. But also equally, you know, not every school of sanctuary has to have students from refugee backgrounds in it, or migrant backgrounds. So learning about something from different people from different countries. It's also learning about the wonderful variety of languages that we have. In some schools, I've heard up to, in a couple of schools, up to 45 different languages are spoken within the school, which is just truly astonishing, yeah. Right? So I was learning just something about that, taking the time to learn, say, hello, or a different greeting, a different language. There are so many different opportunities to learn, right? Possibly the biggest component of the framework is action. And I like to think of action as showing up, showing solidarity. So it's taking action to show people that they are welcome and included and feel safe. So I talked about that welcome from the moment, first moment of entry, on the first day, so that it could be part of it. That action could also be in the form of different intercultural days. Lots of schools are already doing this, and they're lovely. And you know, students get the opportunity to dress, to bring in food from their own countries, and some students also wear maybe traditional clothing. But that's not the only way. And I'd like to point out as well, take the opportunity to point out that we shouldn't also make a child have to be representative of that country.
Yeah.
Kids like to blend in. We all remember being teenagers and we just wanted to be the same as all our friends, and we wore identical clothing and all of the rest of it. And if someone had told me to wear the dress of children from, you know, from Syria when I was in school, I would have said, absolutely not. I'd never worn it before, and why should I have to start? And also, I'd like to point out, I never even liked hummus until I was 15 years old. Unfortunately, to my father's utter horror. So, you know, bringing in that food, you know, it's not just food and clothing that represents those children.
Yeah.
So what other things? So I was talking about kind of the contemporary culture and trying to bring in other aspects as well. But it's also about inviting in and making connections with perhaps the community outside of school. So inviting in people from parents, perhaps, or people from migrant support groups. And there are so many different ways that students can take action. And this is where that the School of Sanctuary groups, which every school as part of their journey is required to set up a sanctuary group, a sanctuary committee. And that should really be made up of students from across the different age groups, but also from a good variety of teachers, hopefully representation from someone on the board of management or senior staff. In some cases, there are parents. In some cases, there's past pupils who are still on them. And these committees are just amazing at coming up with ideas for their schools of what they can do. And the students' discussions themselves are just fab. In one school, for example, I was at a boys' school recently and they were awarded School of Sanctuary status. And there was a whole bunch of boys and they were just mad into computer games. And the teacher was like, what am I going to do with them? Because they just weren't interested. So she said, OK, who's into Minecraft? All the hands went up. And the boys went off and set up a Minecraft world based on all the different countries of origins from that the kids came from. So that inclusion work can even happen inside a computer game. I mean, it's just incredible. So you set the kids' minds to work quite often, and there's so many things that they can do. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of examples of different activities that schools and students have done
And can I ask you, Sarah, beg your pardon, the journey, you mentioned journey there, that word. If I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, gosh, I'm a teacher, I'm a principal, I want my school to be a school of sanctuary. What does the journey look like? Where would someone start?
Okay. So the journey starts really with, I suppose, hopefully it started here today for those who are listening.
Hopefully. That's the plan.
Contacting us in Schools of Sanctuary. So contacting us via our website, www.sos.ie, schoolsofsanctuaryireland.ie for the acronym. And we will put you in touch with one of our regional coordinators. And the regional coordinators will send you out further information about what's involved, and have conversations with you about what you're already doing or what teachers are already doing in their schools, and take it from there. So we have lots of information on our website. We've got first steps information, and giving broad outlines of the things that schools need to do. So that's it. And really kind of, we'll start the conversation with individual teachers. And we're also really happy to start that conversation with those student teachers who are still in college thinking, this is great. And I'd love to come with this in my back pocket to the new school that I'm going to.
Yeah.
And perhaps it's a school that they know and they can see the need. Or perhaps it's a school that they absolutely have no connection with and know nothing about. But Schools of Sanctuary is for every school in the country, whether it's a DESH school in DESH 1 band, or whether it's a school that is rural,
denominational, non-denominational,
that's it.
Primary, post-primary. Yeah.
So, we work with all the patron bodies, with Educate Together, with the Catholic school bodies, the Protestant school body trusts, with everybody.
So to go to the website first, www.sosi.ie, and then the contact kind of starts from there. Absolutely.
And I suppose maybe if I could bring in here, because I was talking about our framework of learn and action, and the last one was share. Right?
Yeah.
And so this is kind of where the beginning of share might happen for some teachers, in that when a school, they're doing their learn, they're doing their action, and really it's about sharing that information across the school and out into the community. And, we've talked about a school journey, and when a school becomes a champion school of sanctuary, their journey doesn't end. And we expect them and hope that they will continue sharing their expertise and their knowledge within their school and with the new teachers as they join their school, but also outside those schools. So we will always put a school in contact, somebody who's making inquiries in contact with a teacher from a champion school.
Oh, great. So the link is there.
Link is there.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And it's sharing communities of practice. And ultimately it's great for teachers to hear from other teachers, not necessarily from us.
Yeah. Okay. So Sarah, you mentioned that if a school wants to approach Schools of Sanctuary Ireland and either gather more information or begin that journey with you guys, they are put in contact with someone from Schools of Sanctuary Ireland. Is that the only person that they're in contact with, or is there anyone else?
No, not at all. So we are very fortunate that there are people with lived experience of seeking sanctuary, people who have gone through the international protection process, we train them in public speaking. They learn about the Irish education system, and then they come to schools and they share their personal testimonies of what's happened to them. There is just nothing more powerful than hearing a story firsthand of why people are forced to flee.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that. I have to ask, Sarah, do you have a story that captures what belonging can mean for a child or a family? Or can you tell us maybe about one child or a moment that's maybe stayed with you and reminds you why this work, your work, matters so much?
There's a student I remember from a secondary school earlier on this year who arrived in this country 3 years ago with very little English. She has just finished her junior cert, and she took... She's kind of the kind of child that perhaps stands out a little bit, because you could see that she perhaps struggled a little bit socially, didn't quite get all the social cues of her peers, had a speech impediment, and perhaps struggled just a little bit. And through Schools of Sanctuary, she found her voice. Being on the committee, she was able to express what it was like for her to be that, to be in a new country, to be in a new environment. And she expressed that through writing. And that turned into public speaking with her writing. And I met her several times. And over the course of the short journey that I had interaction with her from, I could see every time her gaining in confidence, gaining in confidence, gaining, taking up the space that she rightly owned within the school. And it just, you know, it gave her the tools, and so many other students that I come across, the tools and the knowledge to be able to say, I'm okay, I'm all right, just as I am, and I'm enough. Mm. And it's so crucially important, you know. And, you know, we talk about well-being an awful lot these days and mental health, and I think Schools of Sanctuary framework really allows for that to flourish. And it allows for that to flourish with so many students. You know, I often say that Schools of Sanctuary could be applied to... so many different children from so many different, and students, young people from so many different backgrounds, to LGBTQ plus children, to neurodiverse children, to the framework applies. There's zero reason why it shouldn't apply.
How long are Schools of Sanctuary Ireland up and running and around by now? So, and I'm only asking, this is me kicking myself, because I'm like, before I came into this position, you know, I would have loved the opportunity just to have reached out. So,
So it's not been around that long.
Okay.
And we're still growing. So Schools of Sanctuary actually came from its sister organisation, City of Sanctuary UK. City of Sanctuary UK has been running for about 20 years. However, their Schools of Sanctuary programme has been running for about 10 years. So the basic idea and concept came from there, but it had to be radically adapted because the school system is very, very different.
Sure, yeah.
And whereas there's a huge input from local authority, at local authority level in the UK, in the education system, there isn't here. There's a small part in the within the ETBs, but the Department of Education and local authorities don't really talk to each other. So it's a very different approach. It has been running here. Places of Sanctuary Ireland was set up in 2016, and Schools of Sanctuary was formally launched in 2019, 2 months before COVID.
Oh, gosh.
So I think... I wasn't working with the organisation at the time, but I was very familiar with them, having had lots of contact with them previously. They thought that COVID was going to be a disaster, but actually, in a funny way, it, amongst all the chaos and the madness, it gave schools the opportunity to see those kids that really were falling outside of the boundaries. And so... lots of schools began, well, not lots, but some schools began to take on Schools of a Sanctuary as a way of bringing those children back in as rapidly as they could. Mm. So started off in 2019, 2021, there were three champion Schools of Sanctuary. And now, as of June 2026, no, we're July now, sorry, July 2026, we now have 67 champion Schools of Sanctuary. in both primary and post-primary. And we have around another 80 schools that are member schools. That means that they have signed up and signed our pledge to become a school of sanctuary and are beginning to take the framework of Learn, Action, Share on board. And we've been in contact with, say, another 250 other schools and had conversations about them starting. And some of them will and some of them won't. But there is a lot of interest out there.
And hopefully even more after today.
And hopefully even more, yeah. And I suppose what I'd like to say, and why I really like what we do, is because Schools of Sanctuary isn't just another project. It's not something where you have to tick the boxes and then you've got all the boxes ticked and then that's it, brilliant, and you get your prize. It is very much a journey and it is flexible. So a school can start it at any time in the year. And they can take as long or as short as they want to take over it. So some schools have completed it in just less than a year. But other schools have taken, I think we had one school and it was about 3.5 years. Mm. And they just took it at their own pace and made really, really gave it a lot of consideration, wanted to make sure that it really, really, really was embedded. The culture of welcome, inclusion, safety really was embedded before they came to us. And also schools come to us when they say, you know what, we think we're ready to become a champion school. It's not us going to them.
Okay.
And so there are certain aspects that we ask them to fulfill around learn, action, share and basic learning. Have they done enough actions and sharing? But there are very few rigid requirements. The learning around terminology, what is an asylum seeker, etc. That's required. Recently we brought in that a school, in addition to their anti-bullying policies, has to have an anti-racism policy and a couple of other smaller requirements like that. But it really is flexible. So it's not something that a teacher should feel that they're bringing in and the weight, that they have that weight of pressure in order to get something done, because it really can be done at a leisurely pace. In my humble opinion, quite often when it's done at a leisurely place, it is absorbed in a deeper level across the school.
Yeah, it becomes part of the fabric of the school.
It becomes everything. Totally part of that fabric. And it is a journey, because once a school becomes a champion school, they don't finish with us. They stay learning. They stay taking action. They stay sharing. And actually, at the moment, we're looking at how we might do reaccreditation. And we might have a couple of kind of programs that we might pilot with some of our champion schools as well at the moment. So it becomes... It just becomes deeper and deeper. And it hasn't happened yet, but I like to think that a school will stop contacting us when it is so embedded in the culture of their school that they just don't need us anymore.
So that's the ultimate goal.
That's the ultimate goal, I think. But I suppose there's always new learning and we're always learning around interculturalism, around anti-racism, and it changes and evolves. And I like to think that we will have those resources, those latest resources, access to learnings, be able to signpost schools towards anti-racism trainings and so on that they can take. That would be my vision, that a school's got it.
Yeah.
That they don't need us anymore. They're just doing it on their own.
I'm going to ask you some practical ideas now, Sarah. So we're going to finish with ideas that teachers can take into school tomorrow. So, in your expert opinion, what's one small change that every teacher could make in their classroom this week?
Make sure that they're pronouncing the names of all their students correctly.
Very good.
Take the time to do that. I had an idea recently that, you know, when they're registering the kids, perhaps they write, make sure that they've got the names phonetically written down as well.
Very good idea.
And give the children who are newly arriving in the school the space to learn how Irish names are said as well, because they're very difficult.
Very true.
I mean, I've been here since 1999 and I'm still not getting it right. And I've been trying.
That's an excellent perspective.
So that's one small change. That's It's small and easy change.
Absolutely. Yeah. What books, resources or organisations would you recommend? I know you've mentioned several, and SOSI.ie and developmenteducation.ie. Are there any books or resources offline that you'd recommend, or any organisations that, you know, I suppose teachers, if they were looking where to start to build up a pool of resources, you'd say, I'm signposting you this way?
That's very difficult because there are so many of them. I suppose specific books, no, I don't have them, but what I would do is signpost you or the students to different organisations that will have lengthy book lists.
Great.
So, for example, we have lengthy book lists on and videos and lists of resources on our website that teachers can access. And then as well, when schools become member schools, they get access to our Padlet, which has an even vaster array of books and so on. But, you know, there are so many books out there, and especially kind of for secondary level, there are so many books that can be that are there in the bookshops right now that are being written about refugees' journeys and stories. And more of them are coming into the mainstream every day, you know. Mm. But I suppose, you know, perhaps the most obvious one to begin with is The Diary of Anne Frank. And let's not forget Anne Frank in this story. And she's the one that most people will be familiar with.
Thank you so much, Sarah. We're going to go to our regular little segment now. So this is Staff Room Essentials, and this is for you to share a little bit with our listeners. So on shelf, the bookshelf, what are you reading at the moment?
My holiday read is Intermezzo by Sally Rooney.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. On Busca Urlishy, so the resource box, what's one teaching or training resource that you couldn't live without?
My trusty guide to campaigning and activism, written by Amnesty International. It's an old one. I love it. It's well thumbed.
That's your go-to.
Yeah.
Fisrocht, curiosity. What's making you curious at the moment within the field of education?
I suppose I'm thinking an awful lot about how teachers in particular are dealing with the impact of bad faith actors and misinformation that is having an impact in their classroom.
Wow.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Would you like to elaborate a little bit or give us an example, maybe?
I'm thinking about how difficult it is for so many teachers to respond to some of the online hate that is being brought into their classroom through online hate, or perhaps it's something that they're hearing in the community. I'm thinking about those teachers who are having to deal with the consequences of that in their classrooms.
Yeah.
And how challenging it is for them to hold those difficult and courageous conversations.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fowlem,
learning. What's something you've learned recently that has changed your thinking?
I was recently on holiday in Tunisia. It was a fantastic holiday. And it opened my eyes to the fact that even someone who grew up in a household with a Muslim father can absorb Islamophobia. And by that I mean there were so many women there on holiday enjoying themselves from Tunisia who were Muslim, and some of them were swimming, some of them were wearing full bodysuits swimming, and it just opened my eyes to the complexity and the depth and the richness of different cultures that often we forget when we're presented with one side or very thin sides of different cultures, and that we have to constantly keep learning.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah, that's a powerful one. If every teacher listening today, Sarah, this is the last spell, remember just one thing from our conversation today, what would you hope it would be?
That change starts from the little things. It starts from the little things like saying hello, making the effort to say hello in a different language, it starts from making sure that every child is seen for who they are.
And I think you said something lovely earlier as well. It's not about what brings us apart, it's what brings us together. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go to this or that beyond the classroom. So this is just a little series of questions for listeners to get to know Sarah a little bit more.
Okay.
So, tea or coffee?
Tea then coffee.
Favourite season?
Summer.
Favourite holiday destination?
Anywhere hot.
Tunisia. Favourite film?
I'm going to go for kind of rubbishy one. Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, I love that.
Seen it so many times, love it.
Yeah.
The Goonies.
Yeah. Favourite TV series?
Oh, I don't have one at the moment. Oh, yeah, this is my really embarrassing one. I love Call the Midwife, which is absolutely horrendous, but I love it.
I love your honesty. Favourite comfort food?
Oh, that's a very good one. So I make, mine represents the different countries that I'm from. So it's pita bread.
Yeah.
With Kerrygold butter and Marmite.
Wow.
It's my favourite.
Never come out. Do you toast the pita bread?
Oh, yeah. It's got to be toasted, nice and toasted on the outside, a little bit soft on the inside, butter melting, Marmite. So that's Syria, Ireland, England, all together. Only other person I know in the world that does that is my sister. My kids hate it.
Is there one thing that's still on your bucket list to do?
Yes. Outside of work, I love painting and drawing. So I would just love a lot more time to do that. And I met an artist the other day and I said, when I grow up, I want to be like you or as good as you. So that would be nice. Yeah.
What's bringing you joy at the moment?
This incredible weather that we're having. Mm-hmm. But also seeing communities come together and bringing out the best in people. And I think there's something about the weather at the moment that's really bringing that out.
Yeah.
Just more people saying hello, more people interacting. And I've seen little conversations happening and heard about them that you never heard. That haven't been happening before. So for me, it's the added connection that people are having at the moment.
Good moods and good vibes all around. Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Books or podcasts?
Ooh. Books in my head, podcasts in reality.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl.
Library or bookshop?
Oh, it's got to be an independent bookshop.
Fiction or non-fiction?
Fiction.
City break or countryside?
Countryside.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Three words your friends would use to describe you?
Caring, outgoing, and a chatterbox.
Lovely. And one word that describes great teaching?
Connection.
Sarah, we've come to the end. I would talk to you all day, but I would want to say thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Fisrocked and Phelim here today. If today's conversation has encouraged you to think differently about belonging, we'd love you to share this episode with a colleague. You can access more information on www.sosi.ie. Until next time, stay curious, keep learning, and remember that every child deserves to feel that they belong. Slán go fóill.